Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
At your service, it's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, everybody. Here we go. Hour two of the Home Improvement Show. Rich Orris here to suit your fancy and answer any questions you may have. What do you got going on around your house? We've been talking a lot in the past hour about the storms and the storm damage. We touched some on some metal roofing right before jumping in here on this hour, and we've got plenty of things for you. But your topic is our concern. What's happening at your home is the main topic and the main concern here. So if you have anything, any help you need, any questions about and around, just give me a call. Again, 314-436-7900. You'll find me right here. And talking, kind of covering the metal, some metal roof information in the last segment, we kind of ended right on a note about the installation complexities of a metal roof, that what's required and what kind of skill label and understanding. And that, of course, plays into that cost of why metal roofs are so much more expensive than asphalt shingles, because you can go at a much quicker pace and it's more routine with the asphalt shingles. But when you have the metal, and you really invest in this 50-year-plus roof, and you invest a lot of energy and time and effort, if you don't have that proper skill label, if you don't have great understanding of that, then all of a sudden now your risk is tripled, because your investment has tripled, and there's no bigger disappointment than really trying to get something and really investing a lot into it, funds, time, energy, everything, and then having issues down the road because it wasn't performed to the best way possible. And when you get these types of roofs, it can be a little more complex in some of the styles now, how they build houses, how they design houses, how the roof angles, and they're making them look so cool and really, really great aesthetic-wise, but trying to put these products together to make it work. And years ago, I had a roof we had looked at that It was all copper, standing seam, flat metal roof, which should, I mean, that has a life expectancy of 50, 60, 70 years. But on this roof, it had all these triangle-shaped dormers with triangle windows in them, and they had issues with how the windows were installed and basically everything getting behind this copper roof. And they also had foam insulation in the top of the attic. It was vaulted ceiling, so foam insulation in the roof joist space. So when it started leaking, it's almost impossible to figure out where it's coming from because it's spreading out and it's moving around. So a lot of disappointment. So that's something to really take to heart and really discuss, consider, and think about when you're choosing to go towards a product like that and really invest and make sure you're getting the best thing possible, and you got a great company and skilled labor performing that. But hey, we got Brandon on the line here. Let's jump on the phones and see what our friend Brandon has for us. You there? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You sound good. How do I sound?
Oh, you sound perfect. Thank you for calling. What's going on?
Great. Well, last year I had a new roof put on my house, the asphalt shingles, and I'm kind of regretting it. A couple of my neighbors went with the metal roofs. It was a bit more expensive. They got cheaper insurance rates after they did that. And a couple questions I have. One of them is it loud when it rains or hails? I mean, is it loud in the house? And the second would be, do you need to have extra protection as far as, like lightning strikes, like a ground system? And that would really be it. If you can help on either one of those two,
Oh yeah,
I consider doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely a metal roof can be louder. You get small hail, you get heavy rains, you will hear more, and that will be louder inside the house than an asphalt shingle roof. The roof I was just describing that we did a bunch of repairs to with the dormer windows and everything, they had the spray foam insulation, and it was a vaulted ceiling. So when you put that spray foam insulation right up against the backside of the plywood sheeting and everything, and it ties right into that, it alleviates the need for as much ventilation as it doesn't need as much because it's kind of covering from that heat and everything. But that can make it louder again also, because you've got kind of everything connected, and so that can even make it louder than just being the metal roof. So you got to watch considering that also. But it definitely louder with that. And then what was the second question?
It would be as far as like a lightning strike. Do you have more of a chance of getting it struck as opposed to the shingles, or so, does that make a difference?
Yeah, I don't think that makes a difference. I've seen a lot of metal roofs, and I've seen roofs with the whole lightning rod system that'll ground it and do all that. But I don't see them automatically offering that or putting them on homes with metal roofs. So I have never heard that takes any kind of play into it, or that you're more likely to get struck by lightning or anything because it's a metal roof. So that wouldn't concern me. I'm not positive. I haven't done a bunch of research on it, but I've never heard that it's an issue.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I'm glad to make it on the air, but I was cruising through town kind of listening to you, and I'm actually getting pulled over right now for being on my phone, and this ain't good. I've been drinking beer, too, so.
Well, be careful. Be careful out there. Hopefully everything goes well for you. But that does bring up a really good question, and I haven't seen a lot of lightning rod systems on homes because of metal roofs, but if there is a roofing expert out there, if there is someone that does these metal roofs all the time that maybe has more information, more statistics? Is it more likely? I'm not positive, but I can't imagine that it is. And if it is, I can't imagine it's like a whole great deal higher. Lightning hits in funny places in funny times, and it hits trees that don't have metal. And I actually, years ago, I had lightning strike the ground really close to me, probably like 12, 15 feet maybe away from me. I was getting out of my truck and kind of between me and my truck, and about 30 feet away was a big giant tree, tall tree, very, very old tree out in Ballin, Missouri. And this lightning hit kind of right in between the middle of us and blasted a hole just in the dirt and put mud all over me and my truck. And it was quite the shock, to say the least. But I was surprised it didn't hit the tree. So it's amazing where and when it picks and how and why. And you've got a 150-year-old, 50, 60, 70-foot tree, and it completely avoided it and just hit the ground right next to it. It was kind of odd. So, yeah, if anybody knows anything on that, has any more statistics or information, that would be good information to have, too. If you have any other thoughts, comments, questions, concern, anything about your house, we're going to jump into our first break. But you can find me right here. We got three whole segments long, a lot of show left for you. 314-436-7900. And good luck to Brandon out there. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, we're back. Here we go. Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is here to help you out today. Anything you got going on around your home, a lot of good stories, topics, a lot of things going on today. Talking a lot about the past storms and tornadoes and oh man, so much happening in about and around our area. But the question for you today is, what's happening in about and around your home? Have you seen anything? Do you have anything going on? Any questions, you can find me right here, 314-436-7900. And speaking of looking at homes and going around and, you know, every day I'm basically going out and I'm helping clients. I'm looking at their homes, their projects, their issues around their home, helping figure out what might be the best thing to do for the ideas of their projects. And hopefully, really what I try and do a lot too is to kind of educate people on what's there, what really needs to happen. And how do we figure it all out and get to something that will work and meet code and have everything that you need? So I'm running around, I'm looking at a lot of different things and we a lot of different types of jobs, and we're constantly discussing and contemplating different types of products and projects that can lower your investment levels and raise your investment levels, and really trying to discuss and figure out what do you really get out of that, and what does it really take to accomplish the things that you're looking at having done. And one particular thing that I see quite often that I ran into just this past week was the laundry area, and you have a washer and a dryer, but you don't have a sink, and you basically have your washer drain, but the washing machine drains typically, especially if it's in a basement or coming up from a floor like concrete floor, those drains come up and they go straight to that washing machine pipe. The hose just goes in there and it's kind of open on the end. So it gets some air from that. So they don't put a plumbing stack out through the roof and ventilate that pipe, because it does it 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 didn't always require it. So I get a lot of questions where we're looking to add a sink into that laundry area. And of course, then I'm going, well, now I got to make sure the pipe that I'm connecting to is big enough to take on a couple, like a 2-inch drain and an 1.5-inch drain. And I got to look at venting this pipe up out through the roof now to actually meet code and have this new laundry sink drain properly. So I see a lot of sinks added to the side of a laundry standpipe that it is against code. I know it works possibly until you have both things you fill a tub up with 20 inches of water and you got the washer draining at the same time and you're trying to drain the sink at the same time. That's when some of these issues can occur. So to get that proper into code really takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. So I had one and I'm like, yeah, we probably will have to get into the concrete floor because you can't just come right off that pipe. So these conversations and meetings can be quite eye-opening at times when you're looking at different types of projects like that and how they get accomplished. So another one that I'm trying to do a lot and that I come across a lot is basically just kind of more of an educating thing of I'm thinking about this product or I'm thinking about this type of project or I want to do this type of thing to just make it an investment I can afford better and really learning and teaching people the pros and cons of some of these just to give them an understanding that, hey, this is what you're up against. It's not that it's even recommending not do something. It's more, let me educate you on what you might receive from that, and then I'll educate you on what you'll receive from the bigger project or the more into it, and then we'll discuss that, and you can make a good educated decision. And it's really about setting expectations, understanding them, and knowing what you're getting and what you're up against. But hey, we just got Brett on the line, so let's jump over to Brett real quick and see what's going on. Hey, Brett, you there?
Hey, Rich, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I love your show. I listen to it all the time. So,
sweet.
Thanks for all the good
appreciate
advice.
That. Yeah, I appreciate that very much.
So I've got a cavity that I'm trying to insulate that's basically formed by the rim joist along the top of my foundation wall of my basement.
Okay.
The problem is that the last beam for the floor is only gives me about a 2-inch gap to put anything up in there because of the sill plate, I guess, is blocking part of that area as well. So I've got this tiny gap to get to, and can't really get any foam board in there or anything. And I was just thinking about putting maybe stuffing some rock wool up in there, or what do you think about handling that situation?
Sure. So it sounds like you've got a floor joist running along the side of that kind of sill in the edge of the concrete, so it's only leaving you a couple inches.
Correct. It's like parallel with the whole wall.
Yep, and the cavity's probably like 5 or 6 inches wide because the rim board's out towards the outside of the house over the foundation.
That is correct.
So I would definitely, whatever you do, I would stuff that thing full and just compact so that it's in there good and tight and it'll stay. So you could definitely do like rock wool, kind of sliding that and packing that up in there.
Okay.
Another way that you can do it is you can blow in insulation, like a loose blown insulation. And what they do is they put like a netting and you kind of just blow in through the netting, open the netting, blow in, and you can force that in there and really fill that up with like a loose blown in insulation. And or you can do the actual spray foam, and you can buy that spray foam. You can buy like kits that'll do so much. So if you could take that, the spray foam kits, and just kind of like, you'll need some bright lights to really see what you're doing, but just kind of spray that foam in there up to the bottom of the floor and up along that rim joist, you can fill it up that way too, because you don't have to fill it 100% because it'll kind of expand. But
okay,
coat that whole rim joist from below and spraying it up and down to the top of the plywood, and you get it about 2-3 inches thick, it'll expand to like 4-5 inches.
Okay.
So the spray foam's probably your best bet. It'll block the most air infiltration and all of that, but it'll cost you the most. And I would watch closely too, like how much they say the kit goes, how far it goes and stuff like that. Cause you'll probably use way more than you think than even the kit says.
Okay. I was just, is there any negative aspects to using the rock wool as far as, like, you know, you have to worry about rodents getting in there or anything like that? Or,
well, you can definitely still get, you know, mice and stuff coming in with almost any of them. But the spray foam, the mouse can chew through the spray foam and come in, but the mouse won't live in the cavity with the spray foam. If you have the loose blown in, or if you're just shoving in either fiberglass or rock wool and filling it, mice can kind of maneuver that insulation and live behind it on that sill plate. So the solid spray foam is your best bet again for the rodents and everything too. Because even if they come in, they're going to have to come all the way through it to the inside.
Okay. Is the drop ceiling enough for fire coat or whatever, that whatever foam is going to be exposed after you do that? Or anyway, I didn't know if you had to cover like that area up just a little bit to cover the foam, so you're within code, or does that really matter?
No, that doesn't really matter as much on like a band board. If you were doing like a whole, only if it's in a, like a living space where your drop ceiling covers that up fine. And they shouldn't have a problem with that. If it's like an attic and you sprayed the underside of the roof and you could store stuff in there and it's going to be open and visible, then there's like a paint on coating fire retardant that they'd make you put over the spray foam.
Ah, okay. Awesome.
So that does exist, but I don't think you should need it in your application.
Perfect.
All right.
I appreciate the advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool, Brett. No problem. I appreciate the call. And we got Jim on the line, but let's get into our middle hour break because we're really pushing our time here, and I want to have enough time to go through everything with them. So we're going to take a quick couple-minute break. Jim, if you could hold the line, we'll pick up on you as soon as we return. Right, we are back. Home Improvement Show, Rich Orr is here for you, 314-436-7900. Get you right to me. And as promised, let's jump right to Jim and see what's going on. Thanks for holding on through the break there, Jim. Can you hear me?
Thank you for taking my call. I also have an insulation question. My wife and I have a home that's 65 years old. We have no basement. We have a crawl space. And in the foundation, there are vents that are there for ventilation. When we had insulation installed in the basement, in the crawl space, the contractor said that someone had stuffed the vents full so that there was no air circulating, and he recommended that we remove that. That made sense, so we did that. And now we're having a bathroom redone. The plumber went into the crawl space to check it out before starting the project and said that there was too much air flowing through the crawl space, going to freeze the pipes. So he recommended that we shut the vents off. I wondered if there was a happy medium there. What would you recommend?
Yes, absolutely. So, do you have an opening, like an access opening from a basement in the house that enters into that crawl space?
Yes, we do.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Is the basement around that opening unfinished, or is it a finished area?
There's no basement, Rich. It's a crawl space. It's okay. Unfinished.
So the whole home's a crawl space?
Yes, it is.
Gotcha. So what I would look at doing, and the way we do crawl spaces today, is we treat them more like a basement. So if you look at a full 8-foot, like, poor, tall basement, there's not really vents that go to the outside like that. So what we would recommend is to not only just close those vents off, but put your insulation around the house, around the perimeter, like what I was just talking with Brett about, on the top of the foundation up against that rim board, and insulate that from the outside in around all four sides. And then do you have any duct work or anything from HVAC that runs inside that crawl space? Or
yes, is it,
oh, there is duct work down below. Yes, there. Okay, so yes. So that duct work will help move air around in that basement, because metal duct work for an HVAC system, it just leaks 10, 20, 30% of the air that runs through it. And so it'll kind of add some air movement and some air into that space. So, because that's the biggest thing, is they're trying to get air into the space. So if you close off a crawl space on all four sides, that's why years ago they would add those vents, because they wanted like some kind of air running through there. Well, if you put plumbing in there that can freeze and do all of that, if you have your HVAC running through there, going to different rooms, that will leak enough to get plenty of conditioned air down in that space and keep it kind of a good condition.
Okay.
And so the only other thing that's a concern with that crawl space is just to make sure there's not too much moisture from the ground, because there's not a concrete floor. So on the floor, is it dirt or is there rock? It's dirt. So it really examining the dirt, seeing if it looks wet anywhere. If you're getting a whole lot of rain in a rainy season, it wouldn't be a bad idea to peek your head down there and see if any of it's looking wet. Because just ground moisture can not be great for a crawl space. But that's kind of a whole nother thing, to where if you found that out, we'd recommend installing like a liner to kind of seal off all that ground moisture underneath it. But for now, if it's dry, then I would go with close those vents, do not have any air coming in from the outside, and then insulate around the perimeter of that. So there's really not a reason to insulate that entire floor once you've insulated the perimeter. It's the same as like a basement. That perimeter, you know, that whole crawl space will be kind of conditioned. It'll be cool and warm with the air leaking, and you won't have to worry about having the floor underneath your feet insulated for temperature.
Okay.
And that'll keep your pipes from freezing. Keep it inside the basement. Keep it inside that closed area.
That all makes sense. Thank you.
Well, very welcome. Thanks for the call, Jim. And yeah, we have changed over the years quite a bit how to do those crawl spaces. And we add things even in basements, how to do basements now, how to do crawl spaces now. If like when we build a room addition, a lot of room additions are built on crawl spaces, and it's a financial investment decision. I get a lot of questions. About 80% of the time when you have a conversation with a homeowner about a room addition, they always say, well, how much more is it to do a full foundation and gain basement space also? And when most people start to find out what that costs to be that much deeper, that much more concrete, and you got to create, instead of a 20 by 36 or 30 inch opening to get in and out of that, now you're creating a whole door opening through the existing foundation to get into that space, it adds quite a bit of cost. So we end up with a lot of room additions on new crawl spaces. And when we do those, we're automatically just putting sump pump with the drainage tile. And it's easy to do those things when you build. It costs a lot more, and it's a lot harder to install certain things after you already have something built. So you start seeing, like if Jim goes in there during a rainy season this spring and starts to see a bunch of moisture, it's going to be a lot harder to work on a crawl space that already exists. You can do a lot of that work while the room or the home is being built and have it ready to go and control water that may not ever come there, but at least you have it. And then if the water does start to come, you're protected and it's going to work. So we're putting a lot of rubber liners in. We're putting a lot of sump pumps in, even though we're in a space where it's like, we know we don't have anything now, but we want to protect you for the long term. And it's a lot less of an investment to do it up front now than it is to find out something's wrong and do it later. So just something to consider whenever you're looking at projects like that is just, like I always say, get educated, figure it out, understand it, talk about a lot of those different things on those types of jobs so that you have a good understanding. But hey, we'll touch on a little bit more of that in the final segment too. If you have anything for me in the final segment, give me a shout. 314-436-7900 will get you to me. And we'll have plenty more to come in the last segment right after these messages. All right, we are back. Final segment. We're going to jump right to the phone. We'll get Bob on here and see what's going on. Make sure we have enough time for you. Bob, are you there? Can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, Rich. Hear you loud and clear. Thanks for your program, and thanks for taking my phone call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, my question is about, I just did an assessment on my roof. You know, I'm in part of Jefferson County that, you know, close to Arnold. It took a big hit. You know, overall, it looks like my house did pretty good, cedar siding. You know, it's got a few little, you know, where the paint's been knocked off. Paint's knocked off of and a few dings in the guttering and all that, you know, old guttering from 1985. Still looks pretty good, you know, considering. But, you know, my roof is only 7 months old. And so I got up there to take a look at it, and I said, well, you know, there's some of the graining's missing down to the asphalt in a few places, mostly on the ridge vent. I had a ridge vent installed, you know, where
Yep.
And so in a couple of little things, and I think I picked up four little pieces. It's probably the strip, the edge of, you know, some of the roofing materials, you know, that they had, you know, where they just kind of like on the very edge of something, you know, on the shingle.
Yeah, itself. Like where they'd made a little cut.
Yeah, right. So, well, anyway, so, you know, I looked down. I said, well, I want to see how much of the aggregate is left there, you know, where it, you know, where the big, the golf ball size hail hit. And so there's, maybe, you know, a few places, you know, maybe 20, you know, over a 2,400 square foot house, you know, roof size.
Yeah.
You know, where it took off some of those granules. And so I had a guy here yesterday says, your roof is totaled, you know. So could you go over, you know, if a guy was going to do some of those kind of repairs, and would you, you know, could you talk about, you know, the nomenclature, you know, how they get the, those granules to stick to that asphalt roofing? So those would be my questions, you know. I mean, I don't think it's totaled the way he said it was, you know. So, and I don't think I sustained a $5,000 deductible damage that, you know, I have on my home, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Probably all these things I could probably do myself. Would you have, so if you can go over the nomenclature of how they get the granules to stick to the asphalt, and then do people ever come back with a little, you know, some kind of a product, an adhesive, and then maybe throw some of those granules of you know, whatever the aggregate is, you know, to do a little, you know, just a, you know, super minor, what I could consider to be a, you know, a superficial, you know, imperfections.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So really, they're the repair of trying to put more asphalt granules or something over those spots really isn't going to work really well. I mean, when they manufacture the shingles, they're stuck on there. It's adhered with, you know, the way that's adhered on there and on the backing. When that hail hits and it hits that spot and it blows them off, you'll never get any type of asphalt pieces to re-stick in a spot like that nearly as well as when it's manufactured. I don't have a whole lot of specifics on exactly what they use, but the process being controlled and compressed and all that, it's really, really put on there. And the only other thing I would say, too, about the hail hitting and the hail marks and someone saying the roof's totaled and not, it's really, sometimes those hail marks are hard to see. And so I would be asking, well, how many hail marks are you seeing? Because I'm only seeing like 20. I mean, do you see a ton more than me, or what's going on with that? Because they can be hard to find if you're not really experienced at looking for what that looks like. But yes, have your roof covered by insurance, you would need a lot of hail marks. They basically mark off 10-foot by 10-foot areas, and you need so many hail hits inside of each 10-foot by 10-foot area on each section of the roof. So if one side has it but the other doesn't, sometimes they really will only roof half the house, and they'll, which is good for 7 months would be fine, but for 7 years or 14 years, it's like, I don't know that that's the best thing to do for re-roofing like that. So it sounds like you don't have enough hit marks on there that it's going to warrant getting a new roof and going through insurance and all of that. But if he's finding way more, because if you said golf ball size hail, if he's finding way more, a newer roof is going to absorb that shock way better than an older roof. So your same roof 7 years from now with the same storm might have enough damage that you need a new roof. So I would maybe just have one other company maybe take a look at it and see what they think and really maybe discuss with them, like, I'm not seeing a lot. How many are you seeing? And really kind of open-endedly have that conversation with them and see, you know, because the next guy might look at it and go, no, you don't have near enough to get covered. You just got to wait the life out or wait for the next one. So
That was my thought, was to get back with the roofer. You know, I've had him put two roofs on this house in 20 years. So, you know, and of course, neither one of them were covered by insurance. Just my luck. You know, everybody else is getting a free roof, and it's like, you know, hey, you know, when is it my turn? I've been paying all these bills. But the long story short on it is that I was just wondering if there was a, you know, and I mean, you can see the ridge vent, you know, took the majority of the, you know, because those shingles, I believe, are a little floppier. You know what I mean? They're a little floppier, if you will. You know what I mean?
A little softer up there. So, exactly. All right, Bob, appreciate the phone call.
Right,
we're completely out of time. You're very, very welcome. Great calls, great conversations today. A lot of stuff going on. So love to try and help everybody out. So, hey, for everybody out there, like always, be good to each other, be good to your homes, and I will look forward to talking to everybody next week.